Our next speaker is Austin Rogers, and he is a cancer epidemiologist in the Bureau of Health Promotion at the Kansas Department of Health and Environment. Prior to working for the State Health Department, he provided research and technical support for the Kansas Cancer Registry and for two large studies on rural health disparities among patients with epilepsy. Austin has a bachelor's degree in biology from Kansas State University and a master's of public health degree in epidemiology from the University of Kansas Medical Center. And let's welcome Austin, because this is his first presentation, first time at CSTU.
Good morning, everyone. I will be talking about patient-provider discussions on lung cancer screening, and this is based on the relatively new screening guidelines for lung cancer that started to emerge around 2011. And the data source for this analysis is the 2012-2013 Kansas Adult Tobacco Survey. The objectives of this analysis is first to establish baseline prevalence of patient-provider discussions about lung cancer screening, then to identify subpopulation disparities in having these discussions, and finally to assess the association between specific clinical experiences and engaging in these discussions. So I want to start by briefly going over the burden of lung cancer in Kansas, but what we see in Kansas mirrors what we see nationally. Among both men and women, lung cancer is the second most common cancer diagnosis, representing about 13% of all cancer cases diagnosed in the state. When you look at mortality, lung cancer is overwhelmingly the leading cause of cancer death, both in Kansas and nationwide, representing about a third of all cancer-related deaths. And the number of lung cancer deaths outnumber that of colorectal, female breast, and prostate cancer combined. And again, that's also true nationally. Whenever we talk about cancer screening, we're interested in cancer stage, hoping to catch cancer early where treatment is most effective. This is the breakdown of stage of diagnosis among lung cancer cases in Kansas, but again, you'll see a very similar picture nationwide. About 1 in 5 cancer cases are diagnosed in the localized stage, and this is what we talk about when we refer to early detection. That's when it's diagnosed in the localized stage. When patients are diagnosed in the localized stage, about 50% survive 5 years. When the cancer is spread to regional lymph nodes and adjacent tissue, that's the regional stage of diagnosis, which 1 in 4 lung cancer cases are diagnosed at, 5 year survival is only 25%. However, almost half of all lung cancer cases in Kansas are diagnosed at the distant stage when cancer has metastasized, and in this stage only 4% survive 5 years. So when you look at statistics like this and understand the burden of cancer, this has resulted in both the public health community and the medical community really seeking, you know, evidence-based ways to screen and detect lung cancer early where you can have the most effective treatments. But the absence of any national screening guidelines on lung cancer has really represented a big gap in our ability to reduce the burden of lung cancer through secondary prevention. So in the 70s, there actually were lung cancer screening guidelines that recommended chest x-rays for current smokers. This was from the American Cancer Society. However, a number of randomized controlled trials around this time show that there was no benefit in terms of reduced mortality from screening for lung cancer with chest x-ray. So these recommendations were withdrawn in 1980. Despite the absence of screening guidelines, a 2006-2007 survey of primary care physicians found that 55% had ever ordered chest x-ray and 22% had ever ordered low-dose CT scans. This is a relatively newer imaging technique, and this is actually the modality that is specified by the current guidelines, the low-dose CT scan. Further, in 2010, the National Health Interview Survey asked, National Health Interview Survey found that 2.5% of adults age 40 and older with no history of cancer reported receiving chest x-ray, and 1.3% reported receiving low-dose CT scan in the past year for the purpose of screening for lung cancer. So again, despite the lack of screening guidelines, both chest x-ray and low-dose CT scans have been used for the purpose of screening for lung cancer. So what changed all of this? It was the National Lung Screening Trial, NLST, which was a big NCI-funded randomized controlled trial that enrolled over 50,000 participants. The eligibility criteria, which are important to keep in mind because the current screening guidelines really mirror the eligibility criteria for this trial, you had to have been aged 55 to 74. You must have had a smoking history of at least 30 pack years. And pack years is how we typically measure smoking exposure. It's the average number of packs smoked per day multiplied by the number of years smoked. So a 30 pack year smoking history could be one pack a day for 30 years, two packs a day for 15 years, and so on. And you must be either currently smoking or a former smoker who quit within the last 15 years. Participants were randomized to two treatment arms, one receiving three annual screenings with chest x-ray, the other receiving three annual screenings with low-dose CT scan. And the results, which were released in 2011, found that the low-dose CT scan study arm experienced a 20% reduction in mortality from lung cancer. So it was this finding that prompted several organizations to release recommendations for lung cancer screening. The first to respond was the American Cancer Society in 2011. They released their interim guidance, which recommended that individuals who meet the screening, the eligibility criteria for that trial, discuss lung cancer screening using LDCT with their doctor. Fast forward 2 years, the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force released their recommendation, a grade B recommendation, to actually receive lung cancer screening, not just discuss it, but to receive it, for adults 55 to 80. So there's a little difference in the age group, but again, 30-pack year smoking history and current and former smokers. And I included a timeline just to sort of recap what's been happening, because there's a lot has been happening over the past 4 years. All of this was, again, prompted by the release of the NLST results, shortly followed by the ACS interim guidance. This is around the time that we were developing our state cancer plan in Kansas, and so it was largely informed by both the NLST results and the interim guidance from the American Cancer Society. We had an opportunity to add a question about lung cancer screening around this time for the Kansas Adult Tobacco Survey, which was conducted September 2012 to September 2013. This was completed prior to the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force recommendation statement in December 2013. And most recently, it was announced that Medicare, which initially was unclear whether or not they would cover lung cancer screening, but as of February 2015, Medicare does cover lung cancer screening for eligible patients. So as I mentioned, the data source for this analysis is the Kansas Adult Tobacco Survey. It's a cross-sectional, point-in-time, random digital survey of non-institutionalized Kansas adults, 18 and older. We include landline and cell phone calls. It was conducted in-house at KDHE following protocols very similar to our state's BRFIS survey, which is also conducted in-house. Our definition of high risk for this analysis is important to make note of. It's a little bit different than these actual eligibility criteria for screening. High-risk individuals for the purpose of this analysis are aged 55 to 74. They are current smokers and former smokers who quit within the past 15 years, and they have no history of cancer. We excluded patients who had a history of cancer with the thought that these patients might receive additional screening services as a result of their previous cancer, not necessarily due to their age and smoking exposure. So we excluded them to be more generalizable to our population of interest. So a key point to point out is that we were unable to account for pack year smoking history with this survey. It was not assessed on the adult tobacco survey, but I'll talk a little bit more about that in the discussion. So the questions that we were interested in for this analysis was, first, have you discussed with your healthcare provider whether or not to be screened for lung cancer? I mentioned also that we were interested in clinical experiences, so we also looked at in the past year whether or not the respondent had discussed with the healthcare provider, were asked whether or not they use cigarettes or any other tobacco products, so having their smoking status assessed, and then also being advised to quit. So those are the other two questions get at. So for the analysis, we calculated weighted prevalence estimates and 95% confidence intervals, taking into account complex survey procedures. We developed logistic regression models to look at crude and adjusted prevalence odds ratios of having these discussions, and all analyses were conducted using SAS 9.3. So this first figure is the weighted prevalence estimates overall and by subpopulation. There were a total of 733 individuals that we identified at high risk, so all of these proportions, thank you so much, are among just the high-risk Kansans. So overall, among the high-risk Kansans, 31% had discussed whether or not to be screened for lung cancer. We made some subpopulation comparisons, and while there does appear to be some variation, none were statistically significant. Next, we have our univariate analysis to assess the association between these characteristics and having these discussions. The crude prevalence odds ratio is represented here, and we see significant associations by sex, age, and disability status, but the crude odds ratios were not significant for insurance status, household income, and whether or not the respondent had seen a health professional in the past year. So from here, we moved forward and developed our final logistic regression model using those three characteristics that we have identified to be significantly associated with having these discussions. And in this table, I'm presenting all of them together in our final model so that we can assess the magnitude for each characteristic while adjusting for the other two. And so we see that among males, there was a 53% increase in the prevalence odds of having these discussions about lung cancer when compared to females, a 68% increase in the prevalence odds among those aged 65 to 74 when compared to those aged 55 to 64 years, and finally a 53% increase in the prevalence odds of having these discussions for those living with a disability compared to those not living with a disability. And finally, we wanted to look at those clinical experiences to see how those were associated. These odds ratios are adjusted by sex, age, and disability status. So for those who saw a healthcare professional in the past year and had their tobacco use assessed, there was a 2.5-fold increase in the prevalence odds of having these discussions when compared to those who saw a healthcare professional in the past year and did not have their tobacco use assessed. Further, for those who saw a healthcare professional in the past year and were advised to stop using tobacco, there was a 1.78-fold increase in the prevalence odds of having these discussions when compared to those who were not advised to quit. And again, those were adjusted for sex, age, and disability status. So again, to recap, the baseline prevalence that we established through this analysis is 31% among our high-risk population. We found that the adjusted prevalence odds were higher among males, adults aged 65 to 74, and adults living with a disability. And finally, that the adjusted prevalence odds were higher among those who saw a health professional in the past year and either had their smoking status assessed or were advised to quit. So again, we did see a difference by sex in this analysis, which we speculate could be due to differences in perceived risk, both by the patient and or the health professional, that might be influenced by historical smoking disparities in this age cohort. We know that smoking rates have been much higher among men historically when compared to women, though that gap has been closing over time. But this could potentially affect perceived risk by the patient or the health provider that might influence the likelihood of having these discussions about lung cancer screening. The difference that we saw due to disability status might be explained by the fact that in Kansas, those living with a disability are more likely to have insurance, more likely to see a health professional in the past year. This is according to our state's BRFIS survey. So that could explain why these discussions are more likely to happen among those living with a disability. And finally, we did see that the respondents who had their tobacco use assessed and were advised to quit had increased prevalence odds of having these discussions, which might suggest a role of physician knowledge and attitudes, not only about lung cancer screening, but also lung cancer risk more broadly. That might play a role in whether or not these discussions are held and might inform future activities, public health activities from our cancer program. And you know, might be important to consider when we develop those strategies. So some limitations of the study. First is misclassification. As I mentioned, we were unable to account for pack year smoking history because it wasn't measured on the survey. We did, however, look at some of the other questions on the survey just to get an idea of smoking exposure and found that among those in our high-risk group, again, 55 to 74, over about 93% had initiated smoking at the age of 25. So that kind of hints at substantial smoking exposure. We don't know that whether or not these individuals have 30 pack years of smoking history, but we do know that they initiate typically at a young age for smokers in this high-risk group. The question also did not specify screening modality. Again, chest x-ray is not compliant with the current screening guidelines, so we aren't able to distinguish whether or not these discussions are compliant with screening guidelines specifying low-dose CT scan. However, despite that limitation, we do expect that a successful intervention that increases lung cancer screening and the discussions surrounding them would be measured by an increase in this indicator despite that limitation. We also had a small sample size of non-white respondents, which precluded us from doing an analysis by race and ethnicity. And further, this could be affected by recall bias. The characteristics that we've looked at, as well as differences in perceived risk, might affect one's ability to recall whether or not they had these discussions. But some strength of this study is that it's the first, to our knowledge, statewide population-based estimate of lung cancer screening discussions. And this is a feasible way to assess discussions on lung cancer screening via population-based survey. We are actually adding this to our state's BRFSS survey so that we can look at trends over time and further assess differences by subpopulation disparities, again, to hopefully inform our cancer program activities. So again, some implications for public health practice. We have integrated this into our state plan and our cancer surveillance system. We, again, added it to our BRFSS survey, so we intend to continue to monitor this indicator to assess progress towards increasing lung cancer screening and for the hopefully the long-term objective of reducing the burden of lung cancer and lung cancer mortality. And also in our state's cancer plan, which I have a picture of, it's on our website, not only do we have an objective to increase lung cancer screening, we also have a number of strategies to increase lung cancer screening. And this is a little bit of a unique situation because these are relatively new guidelines. You won't find a lot of evidence-based strategies that are specific to lung cancer, but the strategies that we have outlined are really based on what we know more broadly to be effective in terms of increasing many different kinds of cancer screening. So this includes primarily educating patients and providers about these relatively new screening guidelines. So these are my references, and I will be happy to take any questions.
Are there any questions?
Yes.
Hi, I'm Leah. I'm from the Vermont Department of Health, and I'm the cancer
Hello.
Hi. I had a couple of questions. The first one was, I know on our ATF, it asked about your current, like how much you smoke currently. I think it asked for an average of the last week or so.
Right.
Is that asked in Kansas?
Yes, it was asked on the Kansas Adult Tobacco Survey. The question was whether or not they asked how many cigarettes are currently smoked, but the skip pattern, that was only asked among current smokers, so we weren't able to take into account, using that question, the former smokers who had quit within the past 15 years.
Yeah, I was curious. I mean, I don't know what percent of your population that you considered eligible met were current smokers, but
right.
I've been curious to see if there were differences in screening, discussions of screening based on their current.
Right, so we don't necessarily look at that, but I do agree that, you know, because we're including people who may not have reached the 30-pack year smoking history, you know, this could be an underestimate of the actual prevalence of having these discussions, so that kind of remains an unknown, but potentially something that could be addressed, you know, as we develop our methodology and consider changes if this is determined to be inadequate for measuring this.
And then the second question is, did you look at including in your logistic regression model whether or not the person was a current or a former smoker and if that made a difference?
The question is whether or not we looked at current versus former smokers, whether or not these discussions were held. We did not look at that for this analysis, although that has come up since then, and I think that might be a good next step is to see if there is a difference among current and former smokers, because that could potentially inform public health strategies. Because if we find that, for example, former smokers are being left behind, that they're not having these discussions despite their increased risk, that's certainly something we need to know, and so that could be a good next step. Yes?
I know it's not in the recommendations at all, and I don't know what Kansas's radon profile looks like, but I'm just curious if you've thought at all about adding in radon questions about layering on radon risk and radon exposure with kind of smoking prevalent stuff in future surveys. I haven't looked at your cancer.
Right, so the question is about radon and how that plays a role in this. We, for the Kansas Adult Tobacco Survey, I don't think there were questions on radon. I do think, you know, when we do have indicators related to radon, but they tend to be not from population-based surveys. There are, it's not USPSTF or the American Cancer Society. There's another group, I can't recall which group it was, that also released lung cancer screening guidelines, and they had age, pack year smoking history, whether or not they were a current former smoker, and then they had sort of another category which was miscellaneous, including radon, and they were addressing the idea that there are additional risk factors for smoking beyond pack year smoking history. So at least one of the sort of federal agencies with screening guidelines does take into account radon, but for this analysis we did not look at that. Yes, question in the back.
For the ATS, are you able to look at urban versus rural, or did you, and regional component as well?
I didn't include it in this analysis. We did look at rural versus urban, county level urbanicity, but that was not significantly associated with these discussions. Another question in the back?
Are you going to be adding kind of your history to purpose as well as the discussion question?
Are we going to be adding Pacquiao's book of history to Burfus? I don't believe that we have plans to do that. Traditionally, we look at other indicators to assess the degree of smoking exposure that does not use Pacquiao's book of history. Not entirely sure why. I'm not sure that a population-based survey asking about Pacquiao's book of history is an effective way to, given that it's self-reported, I don't know that that's an effective way to measure Pacquiao's book of history. But we do look at, like, among current smokers, the amount of cigarettes that they currently smoke. But so that's sort of what we rely on for assessing the magnitude of exposure, but we don't look at Pacquiao's smoking history.
Sort of relating to that point, I've also sort of wondered about that and been trying to figure out a way to measure that. And from discussions with various people in our tobacco program, it sounds like even some physicians have trouble assessing Pacquiao's smoking history because of changes people may have gone through. So
right.
I imagine asking
Any other questions? All right, well, thank you all very much.